I was burnt out on a brick and mortar side of things, but I was so hungry for something for me. So I signed up for Leadville and Leadville 100, which is a 100-mile trail race through Colorado. I run like 26.2 miles, you know, every other Tuesday.
Welcome to the Barbend Podcast, where we talk to the smartest athletes, coaches, and minds from around the world of strength. I'm your host, David Thomas Tao, and this podcast is presented by barbend.com. Today, for the second time on the Barbend Podcast, I have my good friend Dan Churchill. Dan is a chef, he is an endurance athlete, he is an influencer, an author, he has owned restaurants. Dan has really done it all in the fitness space, and he's especially well known in New York City, but he's making a really big impact on the fitness and nutrition world beyond that. Dan joins the podcast to talk about a variety of things. And one is, well, not so sunshine and roses, and that's about closing his physical restaurant, Charlie Street Cafe. We talk about why he did that, where his nutrition and food company is focused now, why they're going after bigger accounts, universities, hospitals, how they're trying to make an impact in that realm. We also talk about Dan's work with endurance athletes, performance athletes, and his own training for an upcoming ultra marathon. Dan is, frankly, one of the most charming people in fitness. I learn something every time I talk to him, when there's a microphone involved and not, and I hope you all enjoy this podcast. Dan, I have a problem, because last time you were on the podcast, I recorded a separate intro, which our listeners just heard for this episode. And I had so much trouble figuring out what the heck to call you. I think I said like chef, endurance athlete, some weird combination. And I feel like it undersold you. So how would you describe yourself now if you had to write the intro? Help future me write this intro.
Yeah, dude, this is it's a good question. And I think it's an exercise that, like, as everyone's listening in right now, it'd be good to identify for themselves, because brand identity is really important. Like, it really is. Not for, like, but for yourself, helping your direction. But for this purpose, like, okay, so if you think of me, David, I want you to think, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Could be anything. First word, go.
You have excellent hair.
Wow. That's great. I mean, visually, I feel very, wow, thank you, dude. No one's ever said it before. Okay, how about this? Think of Dan and profession. What do you think of?
I think nutrition.
Cool. Awesome. Definitely like one of the top things we think about.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of identity, what we look at with the team is like, what is it that I'm doing that's unique to me, but also offers a problem-solving thing? So I think overall, Performance Chef identifies me in that performance nutrition space, but still identifies me as a chef. It also likens me to still lean on that athlete side to what I do, both personally and professionally. So, yeah, man, I think Performance Chef and just all around Aussie dude.
This is going to help. When I record the intro to this in like 4 or 5 days, this is going to help me so much. And all around Aussie dude, if I have permission to say that, boom. Done.
Absolutely my permission. Go for it.
Is that an official governmental term? Like you put that on like official ID, Aussie dude?
Absolutely, man. Yeah, it's actually when you go through your passport security, there's actually an option to click Aussie dude. it gives you what we call thongs, but you guys call flip flops. And a beer upon entry. But if you don't have those, you don't get the Aussie. If you're not the Aussie or an Aussie dude, you don't get those upon entry. So just next time you go through Australian passport security, just remember to hit that button.
And folks, this is official. You can't just pretend here. You get in trouble in customs.
Yeah, definitely. I'm no immigration expert, but I have been through the passport security chain quite a few times. It's also, just to let everyone know, Australian humor is very sarcastic. So if you hadn't picked up on that yet, just want to clarify.
Dan, you were on the podcast a little over 2 years ago. I was looking back.
Wow.
And yeah, time freaking flies.
Dude,
right?
You aged so well, man.
I'm so creaky. You should have heard me get into the chair this morning, just like bones cracking, feeling good. I hope you are as well. What how has life evolved over the last 2 years since we last chatted? And some people will have listened to that podcast, some won't, but I want to know what the last 2 years have brought you, the good, the bad, the ugly.
You got it, man. Well, first and foremost, everyone go listen to the podcast of Barben, not just the one that we did episode one of us talking, but all the others. And if you do listen to this podcast regularly, you should obviously leave a review and share with everyone where you listen to podcasts. So anyway,
you're doing my job for me. I would be out of job if you keep doing this.
One of my things is, dude, I'm always liking to be a cheerleader. It's so hard for you to talk about themselves. When you got your friends, you want to look after them, and also you want to look support them. So, mate, in the last 2 years, we obviously 2 years ago probably just coming out of consistently coming out of COVID. So, you know, there's been a lot of changes in my front. So I think let's look at the major things. Restaurant front, I sold the restaurant Charlie Street. Continue to focus on the CPG side of things, so the consumer packaged goods of our chorizo and bolognese ground high protein mix, which we're now continuously to drive through B2B sales. And when I say B2B, we really learned pretty early on that D2C, direct to consumer, was not an avenue for us. It was too expensive as a frozen item, and just, you know, Meta was just, as if I'm sure everyone's in the D2C game or has been experiencing the ad buying side of things, just got too expensive for us.
Yeah.
And we're competing with, like, you know, companies that are well established. So we decided to not pursue that too long term and decided to go really focus on a channel that we really see, again, we're solving problems in. So we really went hard at food service, specifically colleges, high velocity cafeterias, stadiums, and hospitals, because our product line, you know, not only is it, you know, high in protein, all made out of vegetables, really easy to use. You can use it as a, you know, a sub for bolognese. You can use it in bolognese with meat just to get your veg. It really is super versatile. We're helping these people at large scale minimize the need to, you know, onset extra prep, have a skill set, time, and also just, you know, things like cost of goods. Anyway, so that's a channel we're really striving right now. So the team is directly focused on selling into those accounts, and we're looking at really big accounts as opposed to going through small ones. We haven't got a big team, so the small team we're working with wants to get a big account, so you have less people to talk to administer the actual product. So that's a channel we're really going down, and it's really exciting for us to lock in some of these really big ones. A couple of universities have really signed on, which is really, really exciting. On the personal front, yeah, I think like last 2 years has been pretty interesting with the team on social front. So we've done a pretty good job of really going deep into, well, firstly, analyzing what's going on in the world of social media, understanding what type of content's doing well and what type of content we want to do that's genuine to us that we can scale. So in the last 2 years, my socials have, you know, been doing extremely well in terms of growth. And that's, you know, massive combination of the team putting in the hard work. So across Instagram, TikTok, and now YouTube, we've got a pretty decent following of people, which has been really, really exciting to harvest an awesome community around. And through that, we've also helped pursue the impact that we want to have with, like, you know, schools and things like that through education, nutrition. Obviously, my big partners and my partnerships, like, I've taken a bigger role at Center now, which is really, really exciting. You know, I've taken on an opportunity with, you know, 10,000 even further, and even Athletic Greens, like, or AG1, just like things like that, going deep with these partnerships. And I think that's what is exciting, David. Like, in the last 2 years, the partnerships I now have and the team, the companies I work with, I don't think I've, you know, removed any. And in fact, I've just added a couple based on the band that we can hold. And that's something we're pretty proud of, is the ability to continually re-up these accounts for us to be with, in partnership with and grow with. Like, there's things that people are seeing through, you know, like social media is a perfect example. If you're someone who just posted images 8 years ago and you did really well, if you're doing the same thing now, you're not going to do well, right? So you've got to be continuously adapting. That's led to other things. Like, we're shooting my cookbook in 2 weeks. That should come out next year. Working on the show, the two shows. That's really, really exciting. And then my new restaurant that I'm associated with, which is One Hotels, the Osprey in Brooklyn. So I've taken over that, man. So yeah, look, things are good. I think where I'm at right now in my career is, the team and I are really striving for this position of, impact prolificness, I guess. I don't know the best way to exemplify it, but maybe like a Jamie Oliver, who's done a really good job of digital footprint, TV footprint, book TV footprint, and then also restaurant footprint. You just really like the guy, but also you notice he's there for the right reasons, whether it's working with schools, nutrition boards, all those kind of things. And I do want to get to a position where we have that ability to be like, hey, we've got some pretty genuine, I don't think power is a right term for the purpose of this, but we just got some authority behind what we say, and people will follow in our judgment. And so I really want to have that. So I think it's really important for us to have both the chef side and the, I guess, the community side. So we're working hard to kind of really drive that.
I want to talk a little bit about something that you mentioned earlier, and this might not be the rosiest thing or the most fun thing to talk about, as it never is for any business owner, but selling Charlie Street, selling the restaurant, because just for context, it was a restaurant in the lower part of Manhattan, kind of Nolita area, for those who don't live around here, kind of a hip part of town. And it was really the kind of physical vector I felt for your products, right? People could go there, get a meal, get some great coffee. I spent a lot of time there. There was one week where I had like 4 work meetings in a row there.
It was great, man.
It was great because it kind of became a focal point for, I don't want to say the fitness industry, because I think it was a little bit broader, but for people who kind of gave a crap about what they were putting into their bodies,
sure,
right? And they wanted to surround themselves with people who also cared about that, would actually ask questions about their food, wanted to learn about their food. And I know that you're taking over the Osprey, which is actually close to where I live, so I'm excited about that. But, you know, Charlie Street, walk me through the decision of selling that. I know that it was big, and look, I just sold a business too. Sometimes your identity becomes wrapped up in this physical space or this kind of physical manifestation of what you do and the brand you build. And I would love for you to walk us through that decision process, you know, how it felt, how it's impacted you.
Dude, it is so, yeah, you're 100%, you would know this. Like I think when we're looking at building ourselves, whether it be through, building a business to sell or whatever it is in life, you're always looking for growth and to help get yourself and the people around you the next level. Mm-hmm. Charlie Street was an amazing opportunity when we first started out. It was like, you know, footprint into a brick and mortar in, like, as you said, one of the most hip places of New York City, right? We had access to new friends, new communities, ways to interact, and it was incredible. For 4.5 years, almost 5 years, this place was, you know, taking up 70% of my life. But probably like 99% of my life, like emotionally.
Mm.
Throughout that process, like, you know, I managed to, well, I was already making a living before that, but so I never paid myself out of Charlie Street. So I never had a salary, never anything, but it also took up like 60% of my week.
Mm.
And so I got to a position where I was like, this just, I don't think I can get anything more out of Charlie Street, the brick and mortar right now, given the way the market is, given the way that our current operational structure is. And when the opportunity came that, you know, we had to make a decision, it was like, well, I can either continue on this road but realistically, like, there's only so much more I can give to this business, but not get anything back. So it wasn't a very smart business decision to keep the business. It was a hard decision because in the sense of the community that we had forged and made and like the friends we had created. But, you know, when it came to that last day, I'll be really honest, like we had our friends there and was like, you must be sad. I'm like, I'm actually not. I'm actually so relieved. The only thing I'm sad about is just not seeing everyone every day.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in my space in this, like, you really want to have impact and you're having to go to one space the whole time because you just, you know, it's not set up correctly or there's issues or whatever, it's sapping you. And you don't, I think the hardest thing was not the fact that I didn't want to be there. It's like, I knew I could do more for the world. And that was so hard. So, like, the decision came to let it go. And, we got an offer. And by no means did I make any money out of it. I didn't make any money out of it. It wasn't a case of like, cool, like, this is like, oh, huge offer, I need to take it. Straight up, didn't make any money out of it. But that's not the reason why, like, it got me to where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. It really got me started in brick and mortar. And I learned so much about, like, American restaurant business, which is different to Australian restaurant business. And dude, it's led me to an amazing opportunity that I have now. But yeah, it was an easy decision to make, as much as that's weird to say. And I'm just being brutally honest, like, very easy decision. And if I tell anyone right now, you've been, you know, you put, you know, 60 or 70% of your working hours into a place that you don't get paid for 4 years, I think everyone's like, well, that's a very smart decision. And, but yeah, that's honestly how it went. It was it was sad. And even like every day, like the amount of time I have back to be able to do more stuff is crazy. Even now, this new restaurant coming along, I have so much more time. It's crazy.
Brick and mortar is difficult. You put that in the busiest, most crowded city in North America. Well, maybe actually, I don't know. I don't want to say North America. Definitely in the United States. I realize Mexico City is a thing and a very large thing. You know, we talk on this podcast a lot. We've had several folks come on and talk about selling their gyms. And it was a similar realization, right? They're putting all of this energy into one physical space in specifically the fitness industry. And obviously the gym business and the restaurant business, very different. Every business is different. But a brick and mortar business can only go so far and can only impact so many people. Only so many people can come through the door in a given day, right? And if you're putting 60% of your time into that, it's going to throttle your potential to reach more people, as I know you're trying to do. So I really appreciate you sharing that. That's obviously not always the easiest thing to talk about, but you know, I hope that at least one person listening to this uses that as inspiration to say, huh, where am I putting my effort in my life, my career, my energies, right? Where are the energy sinks? And then where am I getting the benefit out, right? And so recalibrating is, I think, important for everyone, whether you're a restaurant owner, a gym owner, a trainer, an athlete, you name it. Speaking of athletes, that was the most awkward segue I could make. Let's talk about, but I think I kind of stuck the landing.
You nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
Nailed it. Give 7 out of 10.
No, 747 on a busy runway, JFK. It's got a big southeasterly wind coming in, and you crushed the landing, my friend. That's what you did.
All passengers safely disembarked. Let's talk about you as an athlete, because it's an important part of who you are. It's an important part of what you do. And I know that you talk about, you talk about 99% of your emotional energy going into Charlie Street, the restaurant, but I don't quite believe you, because I know at least a few percentage points of your emotional energy are going into training, pushing yourself, kind of being an example of the lifestyle and education and knowledge that you push, but in the physical realm. So talk a little bit about how that has evolved over the last 2 years.
Yeah, man. Like I've always been someone who's been relatively fit. Like, you know, I did really well growing up in the fitness world. And I guess being a chef, you know, you definitely lose a little bit of like that time and aura around being present in it. But in a way, it also created distance to be hungry for it again. And, you know, I've always competed and done stuff like whether it be CrossFit competitions or whatever. When we got rid of Charlie Street and like, you know, moved on to the next phase of our life, I was like, there's things I definitely want to do on the personal front and things I want to achieve physically. I was definitely like, I wasn't burnt out 100%. I was definitely burnt out, but like I was so hungry. I was burnt out on a brick and mortar side of things, but I was so hungry for something for me. So what I did was I decided to think of like something that's pretty extreme to do that would really set me in a path that I had to plan for and give me my love for, lean on the love of like fitness, you know, competitiveness again. And that simply was like, okay, I'm going to sign up for an ultra. So I signed up for Leadville and Leadville 100, which is a 100-mile trail race through Colorado, the hills of Colorado. It starts at 9,000 feet elevation and only gets more gain. It's a 50-mile loop. It's out and back. It's on a trail. Yeah, so it's a pretty intense race. I think only 40% of people finish it. I think it was someone in the study they gave me. But anyway, it's a pretty intense race. And up until me deciding to do this, I'd only run marathons. And I'd run about probably 5 marathons in that time. I can, you know, run a marathon pretty, you know, steadily well. Like if you said to me at the time, like, can you run a pace of like, you know, 3:45? I'm like, yep, easily can do that.
3:45. So that's like 3 hours, 45 minutes for the 26.2.
Correct. So like, I can eat like very confidently do that consistently. If you want me to push it, you could probably get a 3:15 at a time. Then what I was thinking is like, okay, well, for me to crush Leadville, and the goal wasn't to win Leadville by any means. It's not what I want to do. I want to finish it. I want to be one of those people that got to the end and got to, you know, cross that finish line feeling like absolute shit, but just feeling so proud of something. The reason as well is like dedicating so much time to you outside of work and forcing yourself having to do it. So inset. We put a plan in place, and now I'm running like, it's weird. This is the funniest thing in perspective, bro. If you run a marathon before, you know, you build your way up to obviously running a marathon. You do like your 6 mile, you do like your 12 mile, you do like, yeah, anyway. So like everyone's like on their long runs become like a 12 mile plus, and all of a sudden they'll do like an 18 mile. I'm like, holy shit, an 18 mile. And I remember that moment in time. Conversely, I also know the time I did like a 1 mile back in primary school and thought that was the hardest thing in the world. Then I had to do a 2 mile. Anyway, point is, it's all about a matter of perspective, because now I run like 26.2 miles on like, you know, every other Tuesday. And like, for example, on the weekend I was part of a relay race that ran back from Montauk to Manhattan. It's 131 miles. I ended up doing 40 plus miles. And the week before that, I did 62 miles going up to Sleepy Hollow and back. So like, you just, honestly, it's a matter of perspective. And I've got to this position now, man, where it's like, everything's about recovery. Like first and foremost, this morning I rolled. I'm hydrating. I'm sleeping as best as I can, except for last night when I watched the mate's premiere. But point is, you dedicate so much to yourself, and such an amazing feeling to know, hey, this is a goal I want, and I'm putting time aside for it. It's a very selfish thing, but it's also a very wonderful, healthy thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as, you know, running 12 hours on a Saturday sucks for you and your partner, it's also like something you need to do for you. And I think it's something that I've really enjoyed.
And I think too, the lesson here is, it doesn't necessarily have to be to that maximal level. Maybe it's not signing up for Leadville. Maybe it's signing up for the local 5K. But I think taking that emotional energy and putting it into a physical outlet is something that I know has been really, really important to you. So I do appreciate that. I'm curious, and this is not me judging at all, but you finished Leadville. How long did it take you? This is not me saying like, oh, I'm curious. Like, I'm more interested into like how long you had to push yourself for, not comparing your pace to other people in any way.
So it's on August 19th. So I've got...
Oh, it hasn't happened yet. Sorry, I thought it was last year. Apologies, man.
No, you're right. So I've got 2.5 months, but dude, like, I honestly, it's like, I'm actually looking at anyone else's times. I'm not looking at like, I know what roughly per mile pace I have to do to stay ahead of it. But again, like, I'm doing it for me, you know, I'm not doing it for competing with anyone else. I'm going to be out there. There's going to be people out there. It's going to be great on. But at the end of the day, like, I want to be able to make sure that I just say I've done Leadville for me. And so whether it be 29.59, like, because it's a 30-hour cutoff, or 25 hours, it doesn't matter. I just want to complete it.
Are there any other physical challenges you look back on and you say, hey, this progressed me as an athlete? It could be something as specific as a race, or it could be something as simple as like, I, you know, worked out with this person for the first time, and it really pushed me and was a milestone for me in my physicality.
Dude, I think it's all the time, man. All the time. I really, I know that sounds like a very generic statement, but like, you know, the people I get to hang out with, I've got like the Eric Hinmans of the world, the Nick Bears of the world. Like, I went up, there's a distinct memory of like Eric. If you don't know Eric Hinman, he's a savage. Like, he's got to be the fittest dude I know above the age of 40. And he looks like he's like 28. It's ridiculous. He has this Mount Morrison thing that he does. It's like in Colorado or Denver. You go walk this trail with him. And it was my first time doing it with him. And I stuck with him for most of it. And I was ended up finishing about, I think it was 3 minutes behind him, 3 or 4 minutes behind. Maybe, I can't remember. It was a time where he looked at me and goes, holy shit, dude, you're fit. Because he's like, he knows he's fucking fit. And it was the first time I was doing it. And he goes, if you did that in your first time, you're fit. And so obviously, like, you know, accolades of like, if Eric's saying that, that's a pretty big deal. But also, like, I've always known I'm fit. And there's little things along the way where it'd be like, I'm not the fastest person to run. I can't sprint. I can't run, you know, I'll struggle to ever do a 2 hour. I'm not saying ever, but like, for me to run a 2 hour 50 marathon will be really tough. Like, 3 hour marathon will be tough just because of my type of my muscle fibers. But like, even on the weekend, we had this relay, dude. You have these moments like, oh shit, like throughout the race, we're doing this thing. And it's like 131 miles between, you know, your team. And at the end, there's only so many people left who can still run because they're either, you know, struggling, they're not fit, or like, you know, their body's seizing up. And like, despite me probably not being the fit or the fastest out of all of them, maybe top three, I was the last one getting through the miles to bring us all home. And that's not because like I'm saying that part of it's like, I'm a fuck, like that's my headspace. My headspace is just go for it and do what you need to do for the team. But there's definitely moments you go, oh shit, maybe it's actually because I actually have an extra gear sometimes, you know? So it also comes from just being around fitness and stuff like that my whole life, you know? So I do say to people, really cherishing those moments because you get so much benefit on an endorphin and a serotonin front, a fantastic for your health. And one thing I've definitely learned being in America, man, is actually being proud of those moments. I think it's so important to relish for yourself being proud. It's not being arrogant. It's not being cocky. You're being honest to yourself. And it's so important. We definitely do not give ourselves enough credit. We are always our harshest critics. Always. I'm guilty of that every single day. So the moment you can actually step back and go, fuck, dude, that was actually really impressive you did that. Positive self-talk combined with like actual hormonal success is just unbelievable.
Dan, where are the best places for people to follow along with you? What's going on? If they want to see how you're doing at Leadville in August, all that sort of stuff.
Dude, YouTube's probably the best. So you go to Dan Churchill on YouTube. You've got Instagram, same Dan_Churchill, and TikTok is Dan Churchill as well, I think, bro. So if you want nutritional updates, go to danchurchill.com and sign up to the newsletter. The team's working hard to release, weekly updates on meal plans for yourself, things like that. So check that out, man.
Awesome. Dan, thanks so much for your time. Always a pleasure. And I can't wait to try out the new menu at the Osprey starting July 1st, right?
July 1st, my dude. Appreciate it.
I'm going to be there.